no dejaremos que cierren la linda puerta que siempre ha estado abierta a la vida.
You're listening to Latin Radical with Warwick Fry.
And with us now is Dr. Francisco Dominguez from Middleton University in the UK, and he's been tracking the situation in Bolivia. And I asked him if the situation in Bolivia could be described as a coup. The movement for autonomy in Bolivia and the actions of these rebellious governors, as they're called, is generally described as a coup, and in some circle as an attempted coup. Now, is this a fair description of the situation?
I think it is correct. I mean, the government has been saying, certainly Morales went as far as going to the United Nations to denounce it as a coup. In terms of the propaganda, in terms of the government interpretation, all the ministers and everybody actually refers to it as a coup. Mm. What was going on in the Half Moon, as it is known in the eastern provinces, was a movement which did organize in order to eliminate totally and absolutely eradicate the authority of the central government in every sense, whatever. And they took installations, public buildings, and so on, and then they did a lot of vandalism, which ended up in a lot of destruction, which the amount of destruction is $150 million. Dollars. Now, if they had they succeeded, then I think a situation would have been created in which either the people in the eastern part of the country, as well as Morales supporters in the Half Moon in the eastern part, would have reacted to this and would could not have accepted it, therefore making the country ungovernable. And it is this idea of this ungovernability, which I think many of them were looking for, in order to actually create the conditions for something more dramatic to happen. For possibly a sort of junta could have been created, a government of national interest could have been created, maybe sections of the military could have joined it, and so on. It's not clear, but obviously that the intention was to create a condition in which the government could have been overthrown in a sort of civic coup, which is, I think, is the correct.
And the government of Bolivia found it necessary to expel the U.S. ambassador. Now, is the role of the U.S. as significant as the Morales government claims?
I mean, the last, 2 years, ever since Morales was elected, back in December 2005, the United States, through various agencies, such as the International Republican Institute, the USA, the National Endowment for Democracy, and several of the other organizations associated with the U.S. State Department have poured money into Bolivia that is known publicly in the region of about $120 million. That's number one. Number two, the U.S. Ambassador, Philip Golder in particular, has been seen encouraging, more or less publicly, by just the fact that he is attending meetings of the right-wing politicians in the East, especially in Santa Cruz. An ambassador doesn't just go and visit people who are about to wage civil war against the central government unless there is a clear intentionality behind it. Worse than that, Philip Goldberg actually is one of the specialists that actually brought about the split of Kosovo and the balkanization of that region in the past. So he's got a good record of that. And the United States government hostility to the Bolivian government is very clear. It's been proven literally every week, every time the government actually accuses Bolivia of something horrible and so on. And in that context, it seems to me that my understanding of him, my take on the matter is the Bolivian government decided to expel him because he was clearly interfering in the internal affairs of Bolivia, but also in order to, help disorganize the serious threat that was coming against him. And the perception of the Bolivian government seems to be that the key organizer of the whole thing, hinged on the U.S. embassy and certainly Hillary Culpa, and the result indicates that they couldn't pull it off.
But that's unusual. Like a day or two later, Venezuela also expelled the American ambassador or the U.S. ambassador, and Honduras also refused to accept the credentials of a U.S. ambassador who was presented to them. Now, does this mean that the interference in Bolivia has had a net effect on the region?
I think it's got to do with that, but I think there is something else which is important in order to understand this. The self-assertiveness or assertiveness of Latin America, especially South America, including some countries in Central America, is just unprecedented historically. I don't recall, and I'm a historian as well, and I know the history of Latin America pretty well, I don't recall any other occasion in the last 100 years where the Latin Americans have been so assertive and have stood up so strongly, so decisively against what they see as hostility and aggression, collectively, stood up collectively as what they see as aggression on the part of the United States. I mean, think about it. Had this effort, is there true that the United States was behind every single destabilization process that has taken place in Bolivia, Venezuela, Ecuador, and so on? Had this taken place in the 20th century, the United States probably would have succeeded. And one of the key factors why it hasn't been able to is precisely because of this collective assertiveness that the Latin Americans are having. And the expulsion of the U.S. ambassador from Venezuela takes place one day after, but the context is very precise. The context is one where the Venezuelan government denounced and exposed, revealed a plot to overthrow the government and a plot to assassinate the president. And the evidence is pretty convincing, actually. Obviously, the investigation has to continue in order for all the ramifications to come out. But it's totally clear that, you know, nobody in Latin America thinks of organizing a coup d'etat against left-wing governments that have enormous support thoroughly, without somebody else very strong outside the country supporting them. So the expulsion of the U.S. ambassador from Venezuela takes place in that context, in solidarity with Bolivia, but precisely because what is going on in Venezuela at the time is this extraordinary, coup d'etat, another coup d'etat, coup attempt. And regarding Honduras, well, this is the most surprising of them all. President Zelaya, Manuel Zelaya, he tells a story that he tried, and I'm trying to be very concise here in terms of what has been going on in Honduras, but he tried the World Bank because the country is in total economic prostration. He went to the IMF, he went to the World Bank, he went to the United States, he went everywhere, and, you know, he was totally ignored, treated with contempt. So he decided that the best option for him was what else was around the place on offer. And he realized that there was the alternative, the economic alternative for the Americas, which is called the ALBA, which is the Bolivarian alternative for the Americas. He decided to join it. And he also, as part of his new, you know, having joined this new collectivity, he decided to express his solidarity with Bolivia as well and with Venezuela by not issuing the credentials to the U.S. ambassador. But he did something much less dramatic, because he held it back, and then a few days later, something like 5 days later, he issued the credentials anyway. But the point has been made. I mean, even a country such as Honduras, who has been totally slavishly obedient to the United States, is also in rebellion. This is extraordinary. That is what explains the expulsion of the U.S. ambassadors. And if I may say so, the declaration of UNASUR on the 15th of September in Chile, I mean, this is simply extraordinary. I've never seen in my lifetime, certainly not through the Organization of American States, such a strong statement defending the democracy in one single country under threat from internal as well as from external forces ever in the history of Latin America.
So does this mean that the U.S. hegemony in the region is about to be broken?
It's not broken yet, but it's significantly weakened, I think. If you think about the United States in the 20th century, the political hegemony of the United States meant at the time that actually many of the countries and significant sections of society shared the general views of market-driven capitalism and what they understand by democracy and so on. And it was the left wing that was actually marginalized, and the countries of Latin America depended very heavily on the U.S. for markets, technology, weaponry, credit, I mean, you name it, it's so heavily dependent. And the United States got away with murder during the 20th century. And this became very intense, and that is to say, this hegemony was strengthened significantly after the collapse of the USSR and the Soviet camp in Eastern Europe. But in the 21st century, certainly by the end of the 21st century, it was already clear that, you know, Latin American society had been through this horrible period of neoliberalism, began to actually, you know, fight back, and then they began to look for alternatives to the model that's impoverished so badly. And you can see today that actually the countries of Latin America, in a very large amount, or by a very large number of them, do not share that political, the same political ethics, the same political views of the United States. And certainly they see the United States as a very hostile power that is there, ready to threaten them, undermine them, extremely hostile. And this is the case with everybody. And they understand, I think this is what is going on, they seem to understand that the only way in which they're going to be able to succeed in establishing an alternative model to the one that impoverished them so much is by acting collectively. And the level of regional integration, the level of cooperation and so on is extraordinarily intense. I mean, they have projects for collaboration on energy, the setting up of sort of, you know, Latin American-wide companies. You have already Petrocaribe, which is one company which is offering many possibilities to countries in the region that otherwise wouldn't have any possibilities at all. You have them collaborating at the level of agriculture, technology, and you name it. And even, actually, they already have proposed, and they're working towards, creating a Defense Council of the South, which is designed in order to ensure that they put together their resources where anybody to try to invade any of the members of the club. And my sense is that they're not thinking of Japan when they're doing this. They're obviously thinking of somebody else. So the more it goes on, the better it gets. And what is going on, actually, is that people in Latin America realize that there is an alternative, there is a way out, and you don't have to suffer the consequences of market-driven economic models. So the people of Latin America, from Asia, the people of one country, you know, decide to challenge their oligarchy, and they have to challenge the United States in order to do that. Rather than in the past where, you know, hell broke loose against them, now they get Cuban doctors, they get the Venezuelan oil, they get Bolivian gas, they get technology from Brazil and so on. In other words, not only is necessary, but also is possible. So I think that is what is going to break. Eventually, if everything continues as it is, the hegemony of the United States in the region.